You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Six months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. Eight teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA Play-In Tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Amin El Hassan has flown in urgently because he, too, wants to be executive producer of the show.
I wanted to do it like the way Phil Jackson wanted to coach the Lakers towards the end. Only, you know, how he's doing only home games. I only want to executive produce the show on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Those are the days I'm here.
Right.
You can do
when
whatever
you're on
the hell.
Road.
Yeah, you can do whatever the hell you want on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Are you getting miles?
Nice of you.
I don't discuss those matters on air, Billy.
Billy, Amin is one of, I'm not going to say one of, in my lifetime, and sports writers are an interesting traveling breed on what they collect and what they hoard. I have not been around outside of Boog Shambi, who I've told you before, when he lands in a place, a Porsche picks him up at the wheels of the plane because he's got so many points, because he flies so much. Other than him, Amin is second place on doing points correctly.
Boog gets that because he flies Delta, because he's lucky enough to live in a city with a Delta hub. I have to fly American. Those bums, unless they're sponsors, in which case,
Whoa. Yay.
Yeah.
Those bums don't take care of me for shit.
No, that's true. If you have a lot of points on American, they won't lose your baggage. That's the perk.
Yeah, well, they haven't lost my baggage, mainly because I carry on.
That's the smart thing to do. Real travelers know.
Did you think that saying unless they're sponsors would clear up what you said
it would.
Right after
it
that?
Would 100%.
Absolutely. That's how it
you
works.
You saved it.
These are the things that come with the executive producer role that Billy is presently monitoring today, trying to be careful about protecting sponsors, which is important.
It is amazing that if you just take a carry-on bag, it changes everything. The entire travel experience is changed if you don't check in a bag.
The worst part about traveling now is try traveling with someone who doesn't travel. Oh, my God. It is the biggest pain in the ass ever.
How so?
Well, I mean, just they don't know what to do. Where am I going? Do you think my bag weighs too much? I mean, I have 57 pounds. Do you think that's going to be all right? I'm like, what are you doing? Well, you're going for 2 days? What are you doing?
Early arrival by that voice. Early arrival for that impersonation.
It's not an impersonation.
Well, what is it?
It's a voice.
It's a voice.
Just a voice.
Impersonation has to be somebody being impersonated. Yeah. Like, oh, this is...
But your impersonation is always just annoying sounding person.
Because what I'm saying is annoying. That's the whole point.
But they're all
how much should I put in my bag? Oh, should I bring 3 pairs of shoes or 2? Like, that person is annoying. And so I've given them an annoying voice. Because they might say, how much should I put in my bag? Should I pack 3 pairs of shoes or 2? But then that doesn't communicate just how annoyed I am by this non-traveling so-and-so.
But it's an imitation then. And that's what Dan's trying to get to.
No, I'm not imitating.
You're imitating an annoying person.
No, I'm projecting annoying. Doing an annoying
non-traveling
voice.
So-and-so is an excellent insult, as is on Succession. Seat sniffer is an excellent insult.
A question for you as a travel novice, right? So I like, especially when I'm coming back, I like not checking the bag, but getting to the gate, and then I volunteer for it to get checked. So then I don't have to deal with the overhead, and I don't have to do it. I don't pay for it. I don't have to deal with it.
Last bag in, too. Yeah. Burst out. Yeah.
And I know it's not going to get lost because they just have to walk it down a stairwell.
This guy, he must
dude
not.
Just blew my mind.
Let me tell you something.
Last one in, first one out.
It's I'm not, here for you,
no,
Tony.
That's not how it works. Wow. The jet bridge
that's,
for it.
That's not. No, you don't. Okay, see?
We're talking about a gate check?
This is what happens. This is what happens when you have non-traveling so-and-so.
Like, this is, I don't think you guys understand. And this
I'm
is,
a traveler, for the record.
I'm a traveling so-and-so.
I'm a traveling so-and-so, goddammit. Amin, what I'm telling you is Amin here lives as an elite. He will absolutely judge other travelers for traveling less well than he does. He's perfected this. He has done a lot of this, and he knows he's an efficient traveler who gets maximum points and value everywhere he goes.
I feel like at this point, and like I'm not in charge of anything here, but I feel like at this point it might be cheaper for the company just to get a mean, like a
pilot's license. It's very expensive. It's very expensive.
Just get him a pilot's license to just fly here.
Yes.
Buy him a plane.
Buy and gas, too. So here's the deal. Here's the problem with what Stugatz just said, right? Here's the problem with what Stugatz just
said. Wow. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Why didn't it get any? I don't think it deserved
the Amin laugh.
It got the Amin laugh, but I
get off my plane.
That's not the right sound.
That's perfect.
It's not. How is it?
So, first of all, Stugatz, it's not the first one out, right? Because the bags, unlike what Jess just said, don't come back to the jet bridge. When you do the gate check that Billy just said, now you got to pick it up from baggage claim. By the way, that's why you don't do that. I don't want to be sitting around waiting at baggage claim for the lazy baggage handlers to get to whenever they want to get to and throw it on that carousel and have it go round and round.
Lazy baggage
They
workers.
Are lazy.
I saw something amazing the last time I was flying, by the way, which was a guy driving one of those baggage carts that's on the tarmac, peeling left, and a bag just shooting out of the back of it onto the tarmac, and just he left, and the bag was just sitting there while I was on the plane. There was nothing I could do about it.
Dude, you see the one? I saw a TikTok of one that just rolled away. It just kept rolling down to the runway. I'm like,
somebody stop that bag.
Now, here's the thing. Yes, I will kill the baggage people. I will kill the airlines. You know who I won't? You know who I'm going to
murder?
I'm going to champion. I'm going to champion these people. TSA. Shout out to TSA. They get a bad rap. They get a bad rap. Because I see what they see. Hundreds of thousands of idiots don't know what the hell they're doing. Can't listen to simple instructions.
Non-traveling so-and-so.
Non-traveling so-and-sos. Can't listen to simple instructions. Do I have to take off my shoes? Yes. Yes, that's why he yelled it seven times.
Surely you have pre-check and clear, so you don't have to deal with the masses.
I see it, though. I still see it. Because you get the people, I don't have pre-check, by the way. But you get the people who, long story, we're not going to get into it on air. I'll tell you later. But you see people in line. We're not going to talk about it. No,
that's a good tease. I'll ask you later.
No, but we're never going to talk about it on air.
We're not going to talk about it on air.
That's fine. We don't need to talk about it on air, but I will just tell the audience by way of explanation.
No, don't explain. Just leave it at that.
We're not going to get into it right now. That's what I do all the time, and we never come back to the topic.
That's because you keep talking, though. So that's the trick I need to learn, Billy.
Yes.
Just run over.
He's the best at it ever in the history of radio.
I swear to God, I was listening last night. I was, getting on the plane. I was listening to the pod, yesterday's pod. And I was saying to myself, is there anyone, if we did like a competition of who can keep going, saying a story, a continuous story.
Easy.
Can anyone touch Billy?
No.
Greg Cody could.
No, because he stops. Greg will stop.
Greg Cody could. He could. He's capable of it in his prime when invigorated. When invigorated.
Does that mean drunk?
You got to go to
40 years ago.
You got to go to the maximum narcissistic place with him. Just get him to start talking about his family and himself, and he can rival Billy, but it's the only one who can come close around here.
But back in the day, in his prime, you're saying he lost his fastball.
He has lost his fastball.
Okay.
Did you know his wife went to both FAU and Nova?
Yeah.
The least interesting possible angle to take on the NCAA tournament. Stugatz has mentioned, and he's not wrong about this, that there is a very underreported, undercovered part of the NCAA tournament that no one is paying attention to. And we've got Jordan Miller joining us here in a few minutes. Mr. Perfect from the last UM game. Larinaga calls him the most underrated player in college basketball. And Stugatz says there's a part of this tournament that we're just not covering very well.
We've totally whiffed on it. You have a man who is about to call his last Final Four. He has called some of the most legendary games in the history of college basketball. Villanova, Georgetown, NC State, Houston, Georgetown, North Carolina, North Carolina, Duke. His final game very well might be Miami and FAU. And I'm telling you, if Jim Nance is faced with that being his final game, he's going straight to Augusta on Sunday.
Oh, he's skipping the game. He's not even going to show up on Monday. He's just going to quit the job and he's going to retire before he has to cover that game. Or would he do it like Al Michaels, which is just spitting bile at the game the entire time because he doesn't care anymore?
No UConn, no Jim Nantz. Stugatz, I'm telling you right now.
Stugatz, I see your Jim Nantz just go straight to Augusta and I raise you. He ends up not retiring and comes back next year because he wants to go out on a high note.
He doesn't want to settle for this?
No way.
I think he wanted to call Houston winning the national championship because that's where he went to school. And now that they're out of it, I'm with Amin. I think he comes back.
Comes back for another one.
This is a money grab, right?
Absolutely. This is how you leverage them up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Nantz sees everybody getting paid. Nantz hasn't gotten his money yet. And he does the Masters and March Madness.
Are we alleging Jim Nantz doesn't make
a lot
of money?
Yeah, he's hard to pay.
A golf course in his backyard. No, but
you guys, like Jerry West. No, like he played in an era before the money came.
I really do think, though, that you guys miss the human aspects of this sometimes. Like, I am almost positive that Chris Fowler, and I haven't talked to him at all, is probably bothered that Kirk Herbstreit is making so much money, so much more than him.
He's not happy for him?
Maybe, but what do you think? Like,
now that Dan's calling him poor, he's going to come back.
He's got plenty of money, but when someone is right next to you and you don't think that they're 70 times as valuable as you are.
I didn't love the Pablo news, I got to be honest.
You said we missed the human element. I just stood up for TSA agents. Like, emotionally. Everyone else is sneering. There. I'm like, no, those are my people.
But you're an elitist traveler. Like, I think the group is being off put by how you're condescending in the way you're talking to everybody about how much better you are at traveling.
I didn't say I'm better. I'm just pointing out mistakes and strategy, like the Billy strategy of like, I like to check my bag. It's good if you don't want to pay to check a bag, but it's bad that you got to wait at the carousel.
Nah, but by that time, like, I'm over the whole travel. You know what I mean? Like, I'm home. I don't care. Like, someone's going to pick me up. They're the ones that are going to have
someone's
to wait.
Someone's picking you up.
But yeah, I mean, if you don't travel, you have good friends and family in your life.
I'm home, yeah.
If you're not a regular traveler, you're probably sitting somewhere in the back of the plane. So getting overhead bin space is more difficult.
Yeah.
Versus if you're a seasoned traveler, you're in Comfort Plus, or you get to pick a seat near the front of the plane, you know you get overhead bin space and you get to board in Main One or Comfort Plus. And so you don't have to worry about it. If you ever like book something at the last minute and you're in the back, the baggage situation, it compounds exponentially how much more difficult it gets.
You're right, because I have sat in the back, but I board group one, so it doesn't matter.
I'm always group six to eight, so there's never storage.
There's
space.
An eight?
I have an eyewitness account of Amin on a plane.
Wow.
And this happened very recently, maybe like 2 weeks ago, where Amin was in the front of the plane, hoodie on, like this, with his headphones over it, not talking to anybody, a man of the people, not talking to anybody, not looking at anybody, very quiet to himself.
On the plane?
On the plane.
Of course. I'm not talking to people. Why
Thanks
would I
for
talk
that,
to
Tony.
People? Wow. Yeah. Why would I talk to people?
It sounded like a snitch, but an unbelievably lame snitch.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't a snitch. It was just an observation.
Was anyone picturing Amin talking to his seatmates?
Hi, guys.
The last person on
Not friendly on a plane. Put it on the poll, please, at Levitard Show. Do you imagine that Amin is friendly and, what is it, convivial? Like just
sitting crisscross applesauce in my seat.
Just welcoming everybody, saying hello to passengers.
Where are you going?
Have a good flight.
Wait, Tony, who saw Amin on a plane?
Yeah. My mom. She was on her way to Phoenix, and she's like, I want to say hi to Amin. And I was like,
No, you're lying.
Yeah, no, I swear.
Tony,
I swear to you.
Let me explain something to you right now. Not only was it an unbelievably lame snitch.
It's not a snitch. It's an observation.
Tony, please stop being defensive I've gotten to the point.
Well, we made Jordan Miller wait for that story.
We're going to get to Jordan Miller in a second.
Mr. Perfect.
Not only are you lame as a snitch, I can't believe how quickly you gave up your source. You gave up your mom.
I'm more of a talking head than a journalist, Dan. You know that. Come on.
6 months, 82 games, and finally, the postseason is here. First up, the SoFi NBA play-in tournament. For this, the rules are simple. Win to get in. 8 teams battle to earn their playoff spot in a win-or-go-home style tournament that is bound to be full of highlights, excitement, and drama. There's no better way to set the tone for the playoffs than this, so make sure you don't miss the action. Watch TNT's coverage of the SoFi NBA play-in tournament on April 16th and 19th on TNT, True TV, and Max.
Don Lebatard. Stugatz, if you give him the choice, Stugatz, you can have the very same thing one of two ways. You could get it honestly or you could steal it. He'll always choose stealing it.
Stugatz.
Well, it's the quicker path. I mean, it's just, you know.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings app and use code DAN to get in on the action.
Jordan, thank you for joining us, man.
Appreciate you for having me on.
And congratulations to you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That's not the way you wanted to greet him, Stugatz.
No, I want a standing ovation for a man. Mr. Perfect in the Final Four. Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Mr. Perfect.
Good job.
Oh, a chant.
Thank you, guys.
Mr. Perfect.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Perfect.
A good chant.
Mr. Perfect. You left me alone.
Love the straggler. Love the straggler. There's always one.
I take it one cheer too far. I always
do it. Very vulnerable. Yeah. It's a very vulnerable feeling when you're the last one out there by yourself chanting. Everyone else has gone.
Care.
Everyone else has gone back to their lives, and you're still out there yelling Mr. Perfect by yourself.
It's for Mr. Perfect playing in a Final Four.
Yes,
I don't care.
There it is. Mr. Perfect being celebrated imperfectly by Mr. Imperfect. Thank you for being on with us. And did you know in the game, because we gave the stat earlier, in 25 years it hasn't happened before that, Christian Laettner was able to do it. You make all your shots, all your free throws. Jim Larrañaga calls you the most underrated player in the country. Did you know when you were in the middle of the game, Jordan, and congratulations, that you had missed a shot?
First off, thank you for the ovation, standing ovation. I appreciate you having me on. In the middle of the game, I did not. Just being a competitor, I just didn't want to lose. I was kind of just in that zone, you can say. And then after the game, people were telling me, like, you know, you didn't miss a shot. And I was just as surprised as kind of everyone else. So to answer your question, I didn't know that that I shot perfectly. But it's definitely a pretty cool experience, especially the stage that it was on.
Do you go into that game, the game plan for you as somebody, that's a veteran coach saying, I'm looking over the landscape and this guy's doing all the stuff for us, and you do it quietly, you're not super emotional. Do you go into that game saying, I need to be better on defense today than I am on offense?
Well, my thing is, I take a lot of pride in my defense. I feel like I'm a really good defensive player, humbly, of course. So the level of intensity that I was bringing and the way I was locked in because of last year and how we made it to the Elite Eight and how I wanted to get past this kind of hump, I'm not surprised by just my energy and everything and everyone else who brought, you know, great energy and intensity. But we knew Texas was a great team. We knew we needed to bring our A game. They kind of had us in the first half. But, you know, we stay poised down the stretch and found a way to win that one.
Jordan, it seems like what you learned is defense wins championships, right?
A terrible question.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. Let him answer the question. I mean,
don't follow that, man.
He didn't answer.
Not got you. Yeah, no, 100%. Like, at the end of the day, right, we're a really good offensive team. And it comes down to us getting enough stops to win a basketball game.
Yep.
And I think, that's something that we're going to have to keep building upon and getting those stops with our next upcoming games.
Can you give me an understanding, a layman's understanding of how strong Omer is?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big fella, a lot of mass to him. I think there's a lot of natural strength to him. You guys see the way he goes after these rebounds like a bull. Whoever's in his way, he's just going to get it. I think it's what helps us. You know, he's our big dominant presence on the inside. And, you know, he's a very important piece.
Can you tell us your story on the path that led to you ending up in Miami and what you view as the most impressive things, obstacles that you've overcome to get to here?
Yeah, so I'll run through it quickly. I started off at George Mason. Coach L was actually there too and took them to the Final Four 17 years today. We won that game. My head coach got fired my junior year. I entered the transfer portal. Coach L called me. First thing he says was, do you know about my success I had at George Mason? We shared a laugh. But ultimately, it was during COVID, so I had a COVID Zoom visit with them. They expressed to me, you know, their interest in my game. They really broke down the analytical side of my game and how it'd be a good fit for them. I ended up choosing Miami just due to the want they had for me. And the biggest challenge for me, especially last year, I would say, was just trying to find my role on the team. Being a transfer is something I didn't know much about because obviously I didn't transfer, and just trying to, you know, gel with the new team and with your new team, teammates, coaches, and see what they really want from you. That was something that was a really hard adjustment for me. But I think over this 2 year span, I've kind of figured it out a little bit more and more. And, you know, that's why, you know, I've been having some success this year.
Jordan, how tough was the transition from the A-10 to the ACC?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the biggest difference, right, is the bigs. In the ACC, you see a lot more 7-footers, 6'11", consistently throughout the league. In the A-10, you know, the bigs usually around 6'8". You'll occasionally see a 6'10 big, but are they necessarily very agile and athletic on their feet? No, they're mainly just there for their size. So that was probably the biggest difference.
That's a pretty good articulation of why a conference would be better than another conference. Like, oh, the 6'10 guys move like 6'7 guys. That's what makes it a little bit harder. Can you explain to us before this season started, honestly, when you dreamed the big dreams, were you thinking that it landed here?
That's a great question. You know, there was the unknown because we made a really deep run last year to the Elite Eight, and it was obviously something we wanted to do, but we lost pieces in Cam Augusti, Charlie Moore, Sam Wardenberg, who were all starters and key pieces to our last year's team. So this year's team I knew was going to look different due to Nigel Pack coming in. You know, he's a sharpshooter. Norchad, who obviously is a bull, but, you know, immediately first thing you think is, okay, he's only 6'7". How is he going to do against 7-footers?
He's stronger than all of them, though. Like, it's weird. I don't understand. I don't know how many dudes like that you've played at that size that have that kind of strength. It's really unusual.
Yeah. He honestly reminds me of Kenneth Faried from the NBA. I don't know if you guys know who that is. I'm sure you do. But, yeah, so I didn't know, you know. Obviously, I was optimistic, and I knew every player had the work ethic. But I think we found a way to just piece it together and kind of make things come to fruition.
At every level, are you coming off of your best game? Like, what's the best game you've ever played?
I mean, that one has to be up there, I'm gonna be honest with you. For me, again, right, like, media before the game, like, you know, there's a bunch of media stuff. Like, I was telling them I was so locked in for this game because the feeling I had last year. And that's probably the most locked in I was for a basketball game too. Like, I just wanted to get to the Final Four so bad. And now that we have accomplished this, you know, that's a short-term goal you achieve, you know, on to the next. But I think that's probably the best game I had.
Jordan, we got a guy here who's a huge Miami fan. His name's Mike Ryan. He's not here today, but he crows all the time about how you guys are disrespected by other teams, disrespected by the media. What's the most disrespected you guys have felt this season?
I mean, I don't know if you guys saw our Don't Pick Us video. That kind of builds off of just the disrespect we've kind of been feeling all year. But the most disrespected moment, I will say off the top of my head, would be our seeding. You know, seeding doesn't necessarily matter in the tournament. As you can tell, in the Final Four group, no one's a 1 seed or a 2 seed or a 3 seed. But, you know, we were rolling at the end of the year. Yes, we lost to Duke in the ACC tournament. I mean, we didn't have Norchad, which is a big piece, and we only ended up losing by 6. So I would say, you know, our seeding in the NCAA tournament.
Jordan, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate your time, sir, and congratulations on the run. Two more victories. One more victory, and Jim Nance is just walking straight to Augusta because he doesn't want a Miami FAU final.
Right, but you might get his tie, Jordan. You might get the tie. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Put the Mr. Perfect.
Thank you. Mr. Perfect. Jesus Christ.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck, man.
Don Levitard.
You keep mentioning Lou Harris and Lou Williams and Montrell Harris. You keep mentioning
Harold, excuse me.
Stugatz.
Nick, thank you for so much for being on with us. Really enjoy your work.
Oh, thanks for having me. Have a great day.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings app and use code Dan to get in on the action.
Question that I don't know if it'll go anywhere. What happens if in the time of NIL, a team headed to the Final Four just says, you know what? We want more money or we're not going to play. We can't ask him that, but like they're like, hey, John Ruiz, how about like $4 million for all of us or we're not going to play?
He'd pay it.
Well, he'd promise to pay it.
Good point.
I'm hoping that that's where all of this ends, where we can't play the Final Four. The players are sitting out. They want more money. And we'd be like, what are we going to do? It's professional sports now.
You've discussed that for years, though. Like, so the guy's just sitting out before the championship game.
I thought it was going to happen during the pandemic. I thought it might happen.
And that was for free. Like, just out of character, we're going to sit out. But now it's like, hey, I could just say, I want more money, or we're not going to play today.
But I think there are a lot of, I mean, you know the business of professional sports. I believe there are a lot of unintended consequences to the ways that they're doing it right now, where there are rules, but there are no rules. And like, let's go to Congress. Surely they'll figure it out for us. And when the players keep getting power, at some point, these guys who are making $400,000 a year are going to realize that these TV contracts make so much money that they could hold the sport hostage for a televised event.
Yeah, I mean, they could, but I don't think it'll happen because of, like, all the different forces at play, right? Number one being guys are worried about what this means for their future careers, right? Because to organize that sort of work stoppage at the most crucial, critical moment, that's, you know, it's one of those things where everyone pats you on the back and then you don't have a job afterwards. So I think there's enough self-interest fueling people to stop that from ever happening, but you never know.
But I mean, he's wanted to play in the Final Four his entire life, clearly, and he's got some sort of deal, so he's already getting paid.
But it's not like he can. Oh, there's always next year. You know, for a lot of these guys, there is no next year.
Right.
So it's like this is the time you got to do it.
Well, that's also why, like, it doesn't matter if you won't have a job after this, because after the game, you won't anyways, right?
Well, I mean, for the scrubs who aren't getting NILs, but the ones who are getting NILs, no, they're like they certainly think of themselves as people who are going to continue to play.
You're making the argument that the only thing that holds the anarchy together is the fear of the players losing future jobs because they haven't realized the actual power that they have.
And also, they're all like 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. Like, that's incredibly difficult to grasp the gravity of these things.
But you're in the middle of the machine, and you just got done watching Ben Affleck and Matt Damon from Hollywood saying, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do a movie on the amazing story of the sneaker businessmen who worked around Michael Jordan.
Yep.
These guys have a bunch of power. Some of the middlemen have gone to jail because they were running the AAU business in college sports. Patino is back now. Like, the businessification of all this is so overt that, of course, these agents are going to get in the ears of these players and be able to. I'm not saying that I am right to predict anarchy, but somebody's going to talk to these players about you have more power than you think you have, because all of them are learning in the pros that they're their own economies.
But Dan, if I am an elite prospect, you know, assuming most of the NIL athletes are the elite ones, and again, this isn't the guy, the eighth man in the rotation, right? If I'm that guy, I'm going to hold out for some peanuts right now. I literally have an entire career ahead of me of working, making a living, playing this game, hopefully at the highest level. The idea that I'm going to hold out so that my $400,000 NIL turns into like $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, right? It's still kind of chump change compared to what you're going to be making at the next level.
Right. I think if we saw athletes organize at this level, it would be to form a union, not in reaction to making money for a specific game. But obviously there's a million things that make it really difficult for college athletes to organize. And when you have groups like the National College Players Association, that's now like filing lawsuits on behalf of college athletics and college football, like those are people that are out of college that are, you know, lawyers and working on behalf of the students. Yeah. Because the athletes that are in college, you're only in college for 3 or 4 years, and you have to, you do have to worry about yourself and your future and your career and all these other things that make organizing takes years. Like when we organized at Sports Illustrated, it took years. It wasn't something that we could pull together in a week. So I love the anarchist idea, Billy.
Yeah.
And it would be funny to see it happen, but that would be like so difficult.
But
to get everyone on the same
page. The other thing is unions exist to protect the little guys. They're not there to protect the elites. And in this system, we're literally talking about the elites. So to combine what Jessica just said, the idea that like anyone who'd want to be part of this, gonna be gone in a year or 2 years anyway.
Let me approach it from this angle though. Let's say the balls existed now, or they were just coming into the system now, and pair it with what we just read about Ohtani, which is Ohtani's about to get a $600 million contract at least, and has so much advertising and sponsorship, or NIL, from being in Asia, that he's making how much money a year? A record amount of money this year in just, that dwarfs everybody in just sponsorships from Japan, correct?
Well, combined, they're saying it's between like 65 and 70 million, right? But then, like, it's a weird thing that came out yesterday, because then they were saying like what baseball players earn, but they were combining salary and they were combining
endorsements.
Yeah. So like Shohei has a $30 million salary, but will make the most when you combine the endorsements, because it's between $35 and $40 million, right? But he doesn't have anywhere near the highest salary. I think second place is Max Scherzer, who's making close to $50 million this year in salary. And then endorsements is like $2 million. The thing about Shohei that was like interesting, I thought, in that report was he makes $35 to $40 million in endorsements. The second highest one by their estimates was Aaron Judge with 4.5. So like it's not even close how popular he is in terms of endorsements, and none of it is here, or seemingly none of it. Like, we don't see a ton of him here in the U.S. It's all abroad.
Shohei Ohtani.
Ohtani?
Yeah. Ohtani.
That's why I didn't say it.
All right. Go sit in the penalty box. I mean,
I tried to feed that one to me, and I went to the ball.
Stugatz just like a pitcher on the mound.
Get off my plane.
Where'd that come from? He just...
He gave me two fingers. I shook him off. He tried again. I shook him off again, and then he went with it.
Okay,
I mean,
but
Ohtani.
This is what's not subtle about what just happened there. Amin is trying to give Stugatz a joke by writing it, a joke that requires pronunciation, by writing it on a whiteboard instead of saying it to him.
Is that his own personal board? Like, no one uses
it
here.
He travels with it. He goes back and forth. He writes on the board to try and communicate bad jokes to us.
It's one of his carry-on items?
Yes. It is the baggage we all carry. All of us carry every time Amin comes in here and he decides to write jokes on a whiteboard, some of which get rejected because they're deeply, deeply troublesome.
What was the joke?
Money. Show me the money. Show me Ohtani.
Yeah. Wasn't worth it. I shook it off.
Yeah. He was trying to do it unsuccessfully. Billy, this time of year, Billy always takes off. Hey. Always. It's a holiday. Opening day is a day that you leave work and all your troubles behind.
Odd to have an opening day on a Thursday? Is it just me?
No, that's not odd.
That's not odd at all.
I don't know why I thought that.
What are you thinking there?
I figured Monday was a nice, you know, round day just to start baseball.
Monday?
I don't know.
Okay.
New week, new season.
Have you never been around baseball?
Not in a while.
Okay, who do the Mets open with?
The Marlins.
The Marlins here, yeah.
Billy,
I wanted to stump Stugatz.
Where are you, Billy, with opening day, and how excited are you about another baseball season upon us, even though in your division of your beloved team, even though your team has promise, people are excited about the possibilities of can they surprise people on the cheap because baseball's funny?
Well, I think this is like the second highest team salary they've ever had. So it's not like super cheap. I mean, it's cheap-ish, but not like
super cheap. It's more than $100 million, right?
Like, yeah, but also like
on
it's,
who?
It's $100 million in 2023 when teams are like $400 million. So like there's still that, but
they are still the poor people in the division by $200 and $300 million in salary.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not the Nationals, who have Steven Strasburg making $800 million still in his career, and I think has pitched like 4 games in the last 3 seasons. So there's not that. I mean, it should be an exciting season, hopefully, but like three out of the top 10 teams in baseball are in their division. So it's going to be tough.
Yeah, but Dan said baseball is funny, and it's been funny down here at least once. Well, it's been funny down here once. 97, they were expected to do it. 03, that's funny. That's baseball. They have a chance.
They've been to the playoffs three times. One of them was the pandemic season in ever.
I love that one.
You love that season because it was 62 games?
That was a fun season, man. I remember they clinched in New York against the Yankees. I was there. And then things immediately like took a dark turn because those damn Cubs broke Starling Marte's hand in the first game. And then they came back and they won. And then they had to go up against the Braves. And that wasn't close, unfortunately.
What is tomorrow going to be for you? You're one
opening
of the,
day?
Oh. One of the few young people in America who still embraces this as nostalgia. You're early 30s.
I'm excited. I'm excited. Wow. I went yesterday shopping. I got my daughter a shirt to go to the game. She's got a brand new Marlin shirt. I went to the team store. It was closed for some reason, even though it said that it was open.
Have you recovered yet from Dan just swallowing your opening day call from a couple of years ago? He ate you.
I've recovered. Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's in the rearview mirror. I've moved on with my life. There's been many opening days since. I'm excited. You guys don't like opening day. There's a different feeling about it. I had my fantasy draft yesterday. My team, Dan, bad sign about my team. I was talking to Stugatz about this earlier. I know too many people on my team, which is not a good
sign. Bad team.
Yeah. When you know the people on your team, you know the names on your team, you know it's not going to be a good season. And then if you don't know the people on your team, it could also be a bad season. You need to find the perfect balance between the people you know and the people you don't. You hope the people that you don't are people that are good, but that's never the case with the people that I don't know on my fantasy team. You know?
I don't know.
He's still talking.
I also don't particularly care about your fantasy team. Huh. I don't know why you insist on turning tomorrow a nostalgic opening day, emotional, romantic day for you that is all sorts of syrupy. I don't know why you would turn that into fantasy talk.
Well, because fantasy baseball, I mean, it's related to baseball. It's a new
draft
season.
Week, yeah.
Exactly right. This is draft week. It's a big time, Dan.
Yep.
Also, enough with Billy Gill and opening day.
I'm with you. What I'm is fine this? Just living my life.
Oh, I love this sport so much. I have to take the day off from work?
Oh, please.
What is that about? Every year?
He takes off every Thursday. What do you mean?
But take it off.
Okay, thank you, Stugatz. But he also takes off opening day every year.
Well, I take off opening day when it's like a 1 o'clock start and we don't get out of here until 2 because I'm going to miss the start of the game. What about you? Like, you just show up to every time you're in town, you have to go to a Heat game for what? What are you covering? Yeah, are you writing about basketball?
You know what I don't do? I don't take the day off. I go to work and then I leave here and I go to the game after that. That's called dedication.
He told you.
Wage theft. Yeah.
Billy is still in a part of his life where he cares about this team so much, and he's angling for the executive producer position, that he is now a newsbreaker. He broke the news publicly, nationally, and internationally that the Marlins would be going back to those wonderful uniforms from their inaugural season. Nobody has any issues with those uniforms. Everybody likes those uniforms, correct?
Well,
because it reminds you of childhood.
Some people have issues with everything, I'm learning, Dan. Like, here's the thing. They're wearing the teal hats. People are mad that they're not wearing the black hats, which I don't know why anyone would want the black hats. The teal hats are the cooler of the hats. I wish that they did the vest. They're not doing the vest. But on Fridays, they're going to wear the teal stripes every Friday, except Jackie Robinson and Roberto Clemente Day.
That was a time, wasn't it? The baseball vest era. I remember the D-backs had that. The Reds had it, right? Where'd that go?
The Pirates still have it.
The Pirates still have the vest?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's just because they don't want to pay for new uniform designs, I think.
They're just keeping the same ones. And now, look, I'm not Andrew McCutcheon. Doesn't matter. It fits you.
I was also wrong about my own report. It's Lou Gehrig Day and Roberto Clemente Day. So
that's all right. You're just starting as an insider. Mistakes will be made. I'm more interested in the storage closet in Roy's brain that has a Pirates vest in it.
It's current, Dan.
I know, but I'm just saying there's a storage closet in your brain. Yeah, I know most of the
stuff. I'm a big uniform guy, actually.
Roy, I know most of the stuff in that closet is from 20 and 30 years ago and is useless, but sometimes you have useless facts from today, and getting in with Pirates vests, I love them, was not something I had on the bingo card today.
I'm always here for you, Dan.
Can I say this? I have a bone to pick with Roy that I never thought that I would bring up, but I'd like to bring it up now because Roy said that he's a big uniform guy, and that is true. Like, I remember when the Marlins announced their uniform in 2011 or whatever it was, that they were changing to like the orange and all that stuff. Roy would be on UniWatch every day, and I think he's still on UniWatch every single day. He just likes going on UniWatch and seeing blogs about uniforms
all of the time.
You paid for that?
What?
It's free.
What?
Yeah. No,
what
it's not free.
A waste of money.
What? It's so great.
What do you get out of that subscription?
News.
On what?
Uniforms.
Have you not been listening?
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.